It's Friday, November 20th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast, and welcome to the weekend. Got a lot of stuff to cover here. Before we get to the show, one brief mention I wanted to make is of the two-time Cy Young winner, Tim Lincecum. We reported yesterday that he won the Cy Young Award for the second year in a row. Well, now he's made a statement regarding his arrest for 3.3 grams of marijuana and a pot pipe. Quote, "I made a mistake, and I regret my actions earlier this month in Washington. I want to apologize to the Giants organization and the fans. I know as a pro athlete, I have a responsibility to conduct myself appropriately on and off the field. I certainly learned a valuable lesson from all of this. I promise to do better in the future." End quote. Regret and apologize for what action in Washington? Speeding? Because that's originally what got you pulled over. You know, I'm finding it quite interesting, first with Michael Phelps and now with Tim Lincecum, how these athletes caught with marijuana come out and apologize, but never actually mention what they're apologizing for. Michael Phelps mentioned that he had made a mistake. Tim Lincecum says he's made a mistake, and I'm wondering if their mistake was getting caught. Oh, well, at least as long as they're not denigrating marijuana use and saying that they regret being desperate reefer junkies, I guess it's good news, right? And speaking of good news, Lincecum still has to appear in a Vancouver, Washington court on December 22nd. That's a Tuesday, and I'm going to be there to get audio and to protest to ask Tim Lincecum and all the other pro athletes to come out in favor of ending marijuana prohibition. I also want to address some comments I've received from many different outlets, many different emailers, and now Skunk Magazine emailed to let us know that Oregon Normal's Cannabis Cafe was not the first cannabis cafe in the nation. The Skunk Magazine specifically mentions Highway 420 over here in Oregon, which has a smoker's lounge. Let me just reiterate what I mean by a first cafe in the nation. In my mind, a cafe is a place where people go to eat. And at this cafe, they can get coffee and drinks and sandwiches and snacks, but they can also get hot food like soups or hot sandwiches. That to me is a cafe. Highway 420 is a head shop. I've been there. It's a head shop, and in the back, they have a room where people can smoke marijuana. So its primary purpose is to sell pipes and glass and bongs and accessories. It just so happens to have a place where people can smoke. Also in California and Colorado, there are plenty of dispensaries out there, and we've got notes from a few of them that have said they have smoking areas for their patients as well, including some like Oaksterdam that has a little cafe. Well, once again, the primary purpose of these places is marijuana distribution. You buy and sell marijuana there. They happen to have places where people can medicate, but they are not running as a cafe. And those couple of places that do have a cafe don't have a kitchen. They're not serving any sort of hot prepared foods. It's things like cookies and biscotti and coffee. The Oregon Normal Cannabis Cafe is first and foremost a cafe, It has a kitchen, it has drinks, it has snacks, it has table games and a pool table and soon to have televisions. It is a cafe that just happens to only let medical marijuana patients in and allows them to use their medication on site. That's why I'm going to stick with saying Oregon Normal's Cannabis Cafe is the first cannabis cafe in the nation. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your cannabis community calendar, and then we go right on into your hemp headlines, including a look at Irv Rosenfeld, our friend who's one of the four remaining members of the Investigational New Drug Program, that is, federal medical marijuana, who's about to set a world record for the most joints ever smoked. Our friend Jessica Corey, the Republican mom for marijuana, comes out in the Huffington Post with the idea that marijuana advertising could save Denver's newspapers. And in the state of Mississippi, we look at the unfortunate case of a teacher who was caught growing marijuana in his own home. You'll be surprised as to what sort of punishment he's facing and what sort of criminal that puts him in line with. For our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by Normal Show Live, we bring you Rockin' Friday, and today's tune is a little bit of a folky jam number by Sean Hayes called Smoking Signals. And for our interview segment, we're going to bring you some cannabis conversations. This comes from the Drug Policy Alliance's International Reform Conference that took place in Albuquerque, New Mexico last weekend, and it's a panel on medical marijuana that got quite contentious. Some of the panelists include Dr. Carl Hart, Philippe Lucas from the Vancouver Island Compassion Society, Dr. Wendy Chapkis, the author of Dying to Get High, and it was moderated by Normal's Deputy Director Paul Armentano. I bring you a small slice of that panel to just give you an idea that even on our side, there's still a lot of disagreements about medical marijuana. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Something fat and long, pack me a bowl or fill me a bong. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
It's time for your cannabis community calendar, available online at normal.org/calendar. To get your events added to the calendar, send me an email with the subject calendar request to stash@normal.org. This weekend on Saturday, November 21st, Normal Show Live is on the air at live.normal.org, coming to you direct from Oregon Normal's first-in-the-nation, world-famous Cannabis Cafe. Madeline Martinez will be our guest, and we're debuting some new, upgraded wireless connection technology, so we plan on having a perfect show for you. On Sunday, November 22nd, a medical cannabis dispensary law workshop sponsored by Cuman Summers LLP will be taking place at the Sheraton Los Angeles Downtown Hotel from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. This is worth 5 continuing legal education credits for attorneys who attend. For more information, call 415-434-4500 or look up www.cumansummers.com. That's K-U-M-I-N. S-O-M-M-E-R-S. On Monday, November 23rd, Kansas City Normal will be having their regular meeting at 4010 Pennsylvania Avenue in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information, call Brandon Ryan at 888-KC-NORMAL, extension 425. On Tuesday, November 24th, Arkansas Normal will be having their meeting at the Little Rock Main Library in Little Rock, Arkansas. For more information, check out arnormal.org. On Wednesday, November 25th, it's Weed Wednesday with KC Normal. They will be on 90.1 FM KKFI live from Kansas City, Missouri, also streaming at kkfi.org. They join that radio station on the last Wednesday of every month. Thursday, November 26th is Thanksgiving, and the Normal Daily Audio Stash will be off the air on Thursday and Friday for the holidays. But other Normal chapters will still be working, including Kansas City Normal once again with The Schwag at the Uptown Theater. The Schwag is a Grateful Dead tribute band, and they'll be having a special $20 membership to be thankful for this Happy Turkey Day. Contact kcnormal.org for more details. On Saturday, November 28th, Oregon Normal holds their cardholders meeting at the Village Ballroom, 700 Northeast Deakin, Portland, Oregon. This is a twice-monthly meeting only for Oregon Medical Marijuana Program cardholders who are members of Oregon Normal. Also on Saturday, November 28th, Normal Nebraska is having their Omaha open meeting. And Normal of Waco, Texas is competing with the Waco Disc Golf Association Golf Tournament. For more information on all of these events, including names, contacts, phone numbers, emails, websites, and more, check out our calendar at normal.org/calendar.
Are you good?
It's a Normal shout-out.
Our shout-out today goes to the rest of the states that have a D in them. I got a little note from a listener who pointed out that when I shouted out to Idaho and the Dakotas and the other D states, that I forgot a few. So today we give our shout-outs to Indiana, Rhode Island, Florida, and Maryland. Now, we have a few Normal chapters in the state of Florida, especially at the college level, but I'd really like to get that state active because they've got a chance at passing a medical marijuana initiative. So if you're in the state of Florida, send me an email at stash@normal.org. Indiana also has a really strong Normal chapter, Indiana Normal at inormal.org. But it's a big state, and we can set up another couple of regional chapters in different areas of the state. So send me an email at stash@normal.org. Rhode Island has some great medical marijuana activist groups. It's time to start getting Rhode Island toward legalization. We need to form a Rhode Island Normal chapter. Send me an email at stash@normal.org. And the same thing goes for Maryland. Send me an email, and we'll get you a chapter started in the state of Maryland.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines.
Irv Rosenfeld, world record joint smoker, from NBC Miami. When you think of the world's most prolific pot smokers, certain names come to mind. Snoop, Cheech and Chong, Willie Nelson. How about Irvin Rosenfeld? The 56-year-old Fort Lauderdale stockbroker will put his name among the greats when he sets a world record tomorrow for weed consumption while lighting up his 115,000th joint. The best part is that it's all legal. Rosenfeld's pot has been provided by the government since 1982, when he became a patient in the Federal Drug Administration's Investigational New Drug Program. Grown on a farm on the campus of the University of Mississippi, the weed is delivered to a local pharmacy, where Rosenfeld gets it by the bushel. Rosenfeld suffers from a rare bone disorder called multiple congenital cartilaginous exostosis, which causes severe pain, alleviated by a healthy dose of ganja. He's been getting 300 joints every 25 days for the past 27 years, and said he smokes between 10 and 12 per day. The sad thing for Irv is that the ganja the feds grow for him is the swaggiest of the swag. This is marijuana grown by Dr. El Soli in Mississippi, and it's about 4 to 5% THC. They don't bother to manicure the bud much before grinding, so the joints contain stems and leaves and the occasional seed. So don't be too surprised when he tells you that smoking it doesn't get him high. I've also had the pleasure of knowing another of the four remaining IND patients, Elvie Musica. She has the benefit of being both a federal medical marijuana patient and an Oregon State medical marijuana patient. She can tell you better than anyone the difference between federal swag and Oregon's finest, and the race isn't even close. What's really disturbing is that the government set up this investigational new drug program in 1978, and to this date, they haven't done a bit of investigation. Irv, Elvie, and the other two patients have never been surveyed or studied by our government to determine how these decades of medical marijuana use have affected the humans using it. It might make you think our government never really wanted people to know how effective medical cannabis can be, huh? Could marijuana advertising save Denver papers? By Jessica Corey in the Huffington Post. Denver is a city in love with its newspapers. Even in 2009, many residents still cling to the scent and grime of fresh newspaper print. But as the recent loss of the city's beloved Rocky Mountain News still lingers, the focus now turns to saving the publications remaining. In an ironic twist of fate worthy of its own front page feature, essential revenue could come from the most unlikely of sources, marijuana. Denver's top alternative weekly, Westward, gets it. On both sides of its most recent edition's back cover, 32 medical marijuana dispensaries advertise their services. In addition, in the publication's alternative healing section, nearly 9 additional pages were packed with similar plugs. While the Denver Post has run a series of front-page stories over the last month chronicling the brewing debate over how or whether to increase regulations on dispensaries, it has been slower getting into the advertising game, running quarter-page ads from a handful of dispensaries with plans to expand advertising access through a special section devoted to dispensaries and other alternative health outlets. While most of American business is mired in a rut, for medical marijuana providers in California and Colorado, business is booming. But it's not just the sales of marijuana that provide jobs and tax revenue to the state. There are also all the construction, advertising, rent, utilities, and other expenses these businesses pay that create jobs for others. At Oregon's Cannabis Cafe, which doesn't sell any cannabis at all, they're doing the same amount of business in a day that used to take all week to generate. And that's just the sales of cafe food and beverages. The cafe also charges a monthly membership fee and a cover charge minimum at the door. This is why I always scoff at estimates of money to be made from legalization of cannabis. I believe those estimates are extraordinarily conservative and don't even begin to factor in all the ancillary industries that will be formed to support the legal cannabis market. The increase in sales of Ziploc baggies alone could bring in enough tax revenue to hire more teachers and cops or fix some roads. Mississippi teacher faces 30 years and $1 million fine for growing marijuana. Jackson County, Mississippi, from Fox 10 TV. A Mississippi high school teacher is behind bars and facing fines of up to $1 million, all for growing marijuana at his St. Martin home. Narcotics officers from two agencies searched the home of 51-year-old Patrick Charles Walker on Wednesday, November 15th. Walker is a teacher at St. Martin High School. During the search, agents found marijuana plants growing inside and outside Walker's home. They also seized marijuana that had been recently harvested, as well as stuff to grow marijuana, like fertilizers, nutrients, fans, and ultraviolet grow lights. If convicted, Walker faces a fine of up to $1 million and up to 30 years in the state penitentiary. All right. In other news from Mississippi high schools, DeSoto County, Mississippi, from MyFox, Memphis. A substitute teacher is behind bars after DeSoto County Sheriff's deputies arrested him Monday for allegedly having sex with multiple underage students. 23-year-old Joey Johnson of Horn Lake, Mississippi, is charged with multiple counts of sexual battery. Johnson is alleged to have had sex with at least two 16-year-old students while working as a substitute teacher at Lake Cormorant High School near Walls, Mississippi. Johnson isn't the only Mississippi teacher facing charges. Last week, 22-year-old Tyler Bigham, a music teacher at DeSoto Central High School, was arrested and charged with sexual battery for allegedly having sex with a 17-year-old student at a park. From The Smoking Gun, a Mississippi teacher admitted to cops that she had sex with a 15-year-old male student to whom she sent explicit text messages and trysted with in her Jaguar, which bore the license plate GRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRRR following Rebecca Dawn Bogard's alleged sexual assault of the boy, who the 27-year-old educator taught at the Biloxi Alternative School. Bogard is facing felony sexual battery charges. She has been suspended with pay and is free on $50,000 bail. Long Beach, Mississippi, from WLOX. A former teacher faces new sex charges. Police say Joseph Eugene Council, age 33, of Long Beach, confessed to having a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old girl. Until May, Council taught band and choir at past Christian middle and high schools. Council was taken to the Harrison County Jail, where he was being held pending $75,000 bond. Four different Mississippi teachers this year involved in sexual relationships with minors. Their bonds were set at values between $50,000 and $100,000. Mississippi law sets the bar for statutory rape at age 16, so only the female teacher in the smoking gun piece might have been charged with rape. But in her case, and the other teacher cases, the charges are set to felony sexual battery, defined in Mississippi law as a person guilty of sexual battery engages in sexual penetration with a child under the age of 18 if the person is a position of trust or authority over the child, including the child's teacher. Every person who shall be convicted of sexual battery faces a period in the state penitentiary of no more than 30 years. So remember, folks, if you're a high school teacher in Mississippi, growing marijuana plants in your own home is as reprehensible as having sex with your teenage students. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. It's worse. The felony sexual battery charges don't carry a $1 million fine.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, The A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z guide to stoner language and life at Amazon.com or visit PotCultureBook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we take you into the weekend with Rockin' Friday, our segment featuring the best rock, metal, punk, and jam band music, brought to you by Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation, every Saturday night at 6 p.m. Pacific at live.normal.org. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on the Daily Audio Stash, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
You might have first heard a Sean Hayes remix at the Banana Republic, or maybe it was Prada's Milan store, a dance club in Thailand, or a Miami restaurant. If nightclubs and high-end retail aren't your scene, then perhaps it was in your car, while listening to a local folk station or a national tastemaker like WFUV or KCRW. But most likely, and if you're lucky, you first discovered Sean Hayes years ago at a neighborhood bar or at one of the dark, intimate boho venues of San Francisco's Mission District, where he still lives and sometimes plays unannounced shows. Wherever you first encountered the soulful rattlesnake charm of Sean Hayes, it no doubt left you tapping your feet and shaking your head long after the music faded. So for today's Rockin' Friday, enjoy this little bit of jam band folk rock type of music, a song by Sean Hayes called Smoking Signals, and registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Sean Hayes with Smoking Signals. Shore, there are hermits wet from swimming, drying
the road again.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Friends, it's time we legalize the responsible use of marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. We're destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of good, hardworking Americans every year in this country for no good reason. There's absolutely nothing wrong with smoking pot. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at norml.org.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Cannabis Conversations.
On Friday the 13th, the Drug Policy Alliance's Reform Conference was in full swing in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I was attending all the breakout sessions on medical marijuana and marijuana in general. This particular session was moderated by Normal's Deputy Director Paul Armentano and featured many experts in the field of marijuana law reform and medicine. This particular panel was about medical marijuana and the recent changes in some laws and featured some contention about those laws between Dr. Carl Hart, Dr. Wendy Chapkis, and Philippe Lucas from the Vancouver Island Compassion Society. I thought it was an interesting part of the panel, and I bring it to you now, uncut, for your listening in our Cannabis Conversations.
At some level, it seems that we're asking an awful lot of medical marijuana that we don't ask of other medicines. And I think that's completely irrational and unreasonable. I don't think that's a good strategy. I think that we should be just like any other medicine. We deserve to be here, and we don't have to be more moral than anybody else.
I think this is on. I agree. I don't know. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
I think the point is well taken. I'm not anti. If you want to develop cannabis into an actual pharmaceutical, a la GW Pharmaceuticals, develop an oral mucosal spray, I think that there has to be financial incentive to do that, or else it simply won't get done. But cannabis is a plant. And cannabis is quite different than, say, my producing my own Tylenol cold medicine. I'm not going to be able to do that in my backyard. And so for us to give access to ways and better ways to use medical cannabis is incredibly important. I don't think that there is room or necessity to go into patent protection when that happens. At the Vancouver Island Compassion Society, we have access to a lab that works with us. And through that lab, we developed an oral mucosal spray very similar to Sativex. In order to do that, we needed to find a dry heat technology, a way to convert THCA, which is tetrahydrocannabolic acid, that's what you see in a raw bud plant, into THC. Because if you're just making a tincture soaking bud in alcohol, what you're getting is a THCA tincture. And THCA doesn't bind very well with our endogenous cannabinoid receptors. So by converting the THCA to THC and making a tincture, you get a much better product. And you get a product that anyone can make at home that works, and I've done bioassays with the Sativex spray and with our spray pretty damn close to as well as GW Pharmaceuticals product, except the GW Pharmaceutical product costs $3 per spray. And the spray, for the cost of the spray that we developed, it's about 2 cents a spray. So $3 per spray or 2 cents per spray. Now, we have put the recipe on how to do that on our website. And if you go to www.thevix.com, you'll see recipes on how we make our oil, how we make our cookies, and how we make our oral mucosal spray, because this knowledge, this information that comes from the community, that comes from patients, shouldn't be taken away and just used by pharmaceuticals, who then get to charge what they will and how they will just to make a product that's similar. It's interesting to note that when GW Pharmaceuticals came out with its Sativex spray, they decided to base the price. They had a long range of what they might charge for the product. They decided that most patients, and they saw in their studies, used about 5 sprays per day, and therefore it would cost between $10 and $15 a day for people to use it. There's no coincidence that for medical marijuana patients, it costs, if you're using 2 grams a day, which is the average according to most international studies, about the same price as the GW product. Now, if we can find ways to reduce that cost to patients, if we can find ways to allow patients more control over their health, I think that's something that needs to be encouraged.
I also think we ought to widely...
Yeah, the website address is www.thevix, as in the dog, thevics.com, and you just need to look under recipes. And that dry heat conversion of THCA to THC is quite cutting edge, and I, if you have a chance to experiment with it, please go ahead.
Thank you. Sorry for the interruption.
No problem. I just wanted to quickly add, yes, we can have a discussion about whether a not-for-profit healthcare is the way to go. I firmly believe it is. But I think we also have to recognize that people are not happy with the healthcare system we've got now. And it doesn't really behoove us to say, oh, well, medical marijuana should be just like the rest of it. I mean, the pharmaceutical industry is the most profitable industry in the United States right now. And in 1997, the first year the Harris poll began polling on the subject, 79% of Americans thought the pharmaceutical industry was doing a pretty good job. The last time they did that polling question, in 2004, the polling had dropped so seriously that now the only industries ranked lower than the pharmaceutical industry in public approval were managed health care and the tobacco industry. I don't think medical marijuana wants to be in that company.
I don't think that's what's being suggested, because I'm one of those folks who also feel that the pharmaceutical industry is an awful industry. That's not what's being suggested. The point here is that we have multiple battles to fight. And we started off talking about science, whether or not marijuana is a medicine. That's one battle that we're fighting now. There are a number of people who think that it's not. And then so to take on these other battles, I just don't know if it's the most expedient approach. That's all I'm suggesting. I am not saying that we should model the pharmaceutical industry. All I'm saying is that we should not think that we are somehow going to be better than anything else, because we're not. Because you have humans in this battle just like you do in those others. And if people are making money doing this, helping people get better, so be it. They should be reinforced for their efforts.
Paul, can I want
to move on to the questions we're never going to get beyond.
The only point I wanted to raise is that there's a confusion here between nonprofit and making money. Yes. Is that the head of the Red Cross gets $500,000 a year.
Nonprofits.
They're making money. And she later became a senator.
I do have a couple questions that segue, they continue this line of discussion. I'm going to pose these to the panel as a whole. The first question has, and they both have to do with this idea, are we treating marijuana like any other drug? Are we treating it differently? How should we treat marijuana if we acknowledge it is a medicine? And Wendy wrote this in her book, but I'm going to direct this question to the whole panel. In Dying to Get High, you wrote, and I'm quoting from the book, the complex relationship between the high and the more traditionally therapeutic effects of marijuana is far from settled. Patients' own reports suggest that, far from being an unwelcome side effect, the conscious altering properties of cannabis are deeply implicated in the drug's medical value. Now, as a panel, I want to know what people's thoughts are on this assumption. So are the psychoactive effects of cannabis an inherent part of its therapeutic value, or can we, as some researchers are doing, and Carl can probably speak about this, can we design, or should we design, medicinal compounds that selectively target cannabis receptors in the body that would have a physical or therapeutic effect, but not have a psychoactive or euphoric effect? Can we do that? Is that a direction we want to go, or are the psychoactive effects and therapeutic effects inherently combined and should stay that way? And I'm curious what people think about this, because certainly plenty of drugs, morphine for instance, has euphoric effects. But as a society, we generally don't say that's a reason why we shouldn't have morphine legal for medical use, but when we're having to talk about medical marijuana, opponents oftentimes will say the euphoria is an unwanted side effect, and that is why that limits its use. So that's my question to the panel.
I also do work with developing medications to treat things like cocaine abuse, methamphetamine abuse, and that's been one of those arguments too. People have suggested that could you selectively develop a drug that you get rid of the euphoria of the, or the psychoactive effects? And the question that I have is why? On the one hand, because you want people to actually take the medication and you want them to get some for it. And in that way, they get the benefits of the medication. Clearly, with marijuana, medical marijuana, there might be people who are bothered by the subjective effects of marijuana, the euphoria. Yeah, it's nice to be able to develop medications that are more selective, but certainly, I don't think that we should have most of our efforts placed in that domain. And it's a discussion that has gotten more airplay than it deserves.
Yeah, agreed. You know, I fail to see euphoria as an adverse effect. However, there are a lot of adverse psychoactive effects from cannabis, at least for most users find cannabis to be incapacitating for work purposes, for being able to concentrate and so on and so forth. Those are very important considerations, and I know lots of patients or would-be patients who say they just can't use marijuana medically the way they'd like to because they can't function properly. So, yes, it would be nice to get rid of some of those effects. Whether you can do it is a question that remains to be settled. We need a lot of research on that. I have no notion what the truth of that is.
Well, if you smoke enough, you'll get tolerance to some of those effects.
Well, I have discovered, actually, in my old age, I've discovered that it is also possible to take very small, low-maintenance doses using tonics or something like that, where you could just barely feel the subjective confusion, the cannabis haze, and you do feel some physical effects from it, and I think Sativex is probably trying to reach that same threshold with their skin, too.
Yeah, there's some thought that the CBD, which the cover story in the New Oshawa is, and I've got a couple copies of it, but the cover story talks about a lab that's actually testing for CBD, cannabidiol. And as they say in here, it's not the stoner's friend. So the idea that Sativex having 50% you know, CBD, it may be that it doesn't have the psychoactive effects, and they may have been hybridizing out the CBD for stoniness, since it's, like I said, in here it says, not the stoner's friend. So we may have an idea. I don't think it takes chemical companies to create something. It could be just a hybridization from the growers that is going to be the issue. Oh, also, if somebody could just pass out my copy of the Implementation of the Compassionate Use Act in a Family Medical Practice. I want you to all give this to your doctors, because this is my blueprint for doctors making safe, appropriate recommendations. And my email's on there, so if any doctor wants to talk to me, I want to train doctors in the whole country to feel comfortable making safe, appropriate recommendations.
In infamous, I'd like to just read two brief quotes from my book by patients talking about the effect of the high. One of them was a 37-year-old member living with HIV, and he says, marijuana lifts me up past whatever symptoms I have at the moment. It creates a sense of wellness and well-being that allows me to just function very much the way I could before I was HIV positive. I think the worst symptom of HIV is how drained it makes me feel. The feeling of well-being that we all just take for granted when we're healthy, that mental state disappears when we feel sick. So when I'm stoned, I'm able to just rise above it and press on. I love that. That's a good thing. People who are well might not understand this. When you're sick, it affects your desire to live. If you're constantly ill for a long period of time, you can feel like it's not worth climbing back up that ladder, because every step back is a struggle. So if you can take some substance to make you feel well, even for a brief moment in time to remind you what that's like, it's invaluable. And the other quote is also by a WAM member living with, he's living with actively with AIDS. He says, since I tested positive in 1990, my life has been a real roller coaster. On my worst days, it's hell, a living hell. I lie in bed or on the couch or on the floor. The meds make you so sick, you can't even cope with yourself, let alone the outside world. By cope, I mean how many times you have to go to the bathroom, for instance. The diarrhea is awful. And the first thing they want to do is give you another pill to stop it. I'm not taking another pill. I'd rather smoke marijuana. It can help put you in a different state of mind. I mean, I've never had a life-threatening disease, and now I have one, and I was watching everyone die in front of me. It wasn't just getting high anymore. Let me think about why I'm still here after they're all gone. With marijuana, I can get high and I can let it all go. But at the same time, it also makes it possible for me to eat, to deal with the nausea, the insomnia, and all that. So it's not an escape, absolutely not. And even if it was, why would that be a bad thing?
I think our response to this is pretty simple. I've helped thousands of people gain access to medical cannabis, and I think this is very dependent on the situation and the condition, as well as the personal situation of the person you're trying to treat. We know that cannabis has effects on a number of conditions, and for someone who's suffering from a condition, particularly a long-term chronic condition like hepatitis C, of which I suffer from, there's always a low level of stress and anxiety, and in internal research that we've done at the Compassion Society, we found no matter what the primary condition is, people were using cannabis to treat, 80% report a reduction in stress and anxiety. So this euphoria can be quite positive for a number of patients, whether or not that's their primary indication for the use of cannabis. But there is a caveat to that. In treating years of experience of treating people, we find that seniors, for example, don't respond well to smoke cannabis. We treat a number of septuagenarians and octogenarians. Our oldest member was 94 years old and maintained her own house. Smoke cannabis, vaporize cannabis, because the high plasma levels that you get immediately after use, that is one of the reasons we like it as a medicine, its rapid onset of effect, can be very disorienting to seniors. And so we find that for seniors, we tend to use edibles, oils, tinctures, which give them a longer effect but a lower plateau, and they seem to respond better for that. And so I'd suggest that this is really, in terms of trying to get the high out of the cannabis or not, there's a dose response that's different, and there's a response to the different methods of ingestion that we need to be aware of if we're recommending medical cannabis, if we're going to get optimal and beneficial use of it.
Can I ask you a quick question on that?
Sure.
Your experience with seniors, you think that's because of the age itself or because of the lack of use?
I think there's
two
things.
Some of us are seniors who's...
I think a very, very good question. I have two simple answers to it. I think lack of use, obviously, would be one of it. If they haven't been experienced cannabis users in the past, and so few have, I think seniors are the most underserved population who could benefit from cannabis right now. And I do presentations to arthritic groups, et cetera, people suffering from chronic pain conditions on a regular basis. But the second part of it is is more biological. We actually, just the same way that we used to be able to drink a little more when we were 18 than we do 30, or we might even have higher doses of pharmaceuticals if we're treating a condition at a younger age than an older age, there's biological reasons why we're oversensitized to cannabinoids as we get older, and it has to do with receptor changes, etc. So I think that those are the explanations why seniors tend to be overreactive a lot of the time, and sometimes quite blown away by the impacts of cannabis when they're trying to treat chronic pain conditions or otherwise.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. Leave you today with the reminder to check out Normal Show Live tomorrow night at live.normal.org, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We've got exclusive access inside Oregon Normal's Cannabis Cafe. No other journalist can be granted access inside. I'm there because I happen to be a card-holding member of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program as a caregiver for my wife.
So we'll be talking to Madeline Martinez, the executive director of Oregon Normal, as well as a member of Normal's board of directors. We'll also have Eric Solomon, the owner of the Cannabis Cafe, and some in-depth conversation with some medical marijuana patients who just want to tell their stories and spread the growing truth about cannabis all across the land. So stay tuned tomorrow night, live.normal.org. We've got some new wireless upgrades, and we should have a fantastic show. Cannabis Carrion will be manning the phones and the home studio just in case. And Cousin Kenny will be in the chat room, where we can also take your questions for Madeline or any of the patients. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.